You need to carry Pedras out of here, fast as you can. Get back to the road and go north, toward home. I'll follow you as I can. Corin added, as he heard a clatter of stones announcing the enemy soldiers were again looking for an opportunity to attack. Now go! Corin shouted, and swatted Thunderbolt on the rump. The horse took two steps forward, stopped, turned to look back at Corin, tossed his head, and was gone, leaping over the half-buried stone of the ruined gate. Chapter 12 Corin wrinkled his nose before stepping into the water, breaking the solid green scum of algae on top. The water was disgusting, and smelled worse, but he could not see any choice. He was trapped, with only two ways out. Forward was the channel of water, the surface of the water a good 2 feet below the roof of the ancient drainage channel, where Corin stood. But the roof stones of the vault sloped down and disappeared under the water ahead. Behind him were enemy troops, with plenty of arrows, swords, spears, and most important, a cask of oil and torches to light it. When Pedras escaped, Corin discovered he'd only 2 arrows left in his quiver. And although those 2 arrows claimed 2 enemy soldiers, there were many of the enemy left. Far more than Corin expected. Right after Thunderbolt carried the wizard away, several soldiers had blocked the gap in the wall where the gate used to be, cutting off Corin's escape route. And although Corin's fighting skills were more than a match for 2, or even 3 enemy soldiers, they had arrows and he didn't. He quickly found himself taking hasty shelter behind a stone, with no way out. After an arrow got through his guard and made a shallow cut in his leg, he decided he needed to dash for the wall, or he would be trapped there and worn down eventually. As he got up onto the balls of his feet to run for freedom, he planted the tip of his sword into the soil for balance, and was surprised to see the sword sink into the soft ground. Digging with the sword, he discovered that he wasn't crouched on the ground at all. He was on the rotted remnants of a wood hatch that covered an old drainage channel, like the old blocked-off vault under the cornerstone chamber in Linden. He had tugged the crumbling hatch aside enough to squeeze through, hoping to follow the channel out to where it surely must run into a stream outside the walls. And now, he was certainly well and truly trapped. The enemy had taken a long time to learn that Corin wasn't still crouched behind the stone. Then they had quickly discovered the hole leading down to the drainage channel, when the first soldier stepped on the rotted wood and fell through. Since then, pairs of soldiers had taken turns going down into the channel, but because Corin was able to take shelter behind rocks that had fallen from the ceiling, the enemy was not able to use arrows with any effect, and the channel wasn't tall enough to stand up in, which made sword fighting impractical. After Corin's sword chopped the points off a couple spears, the enemy had retreated above ground to shout insults down at Corin, some of them in the harsh, guttural language of Isidore, but enough in the common tongue that Corin could understand. Even if he didn't know the language, Corin could have figured that the enemy soldiers were not shouting words of encouragement to him, or offering food and fresh water. When they grew tired of shouting insults, the enemy had stopped to think. And that is when the trouble really started for Corin. 2 of the soldiers had small casks of oil with them. Why, Corin didn't know, although it was likely for some evil rites the mages of Isidore used to practice their foul magics. 1 soldier had come down into the channel, rolling a cask before him, and then had pulled out the stopper, letting the oil out. Because the channel sloped downward toward Corin, the oil was now flowing in his direction, forming a thick sheen on top of the water. He could barely see there, underground. Only the light of the enemy's torches above and the moonlight came weakly down through the hole Corin had escaped through. It was clear that the enemy would soon toss a flaming torch down into the channel and set the oil on fire. So, Corin inched forward until his head scraped the top of the chamber, and the water was up to his nose. He tilted his head up, breathed in as deeply as he could. His only hope was to swim or crawl down the channel to where it emptied into the stream, if the old channel wasn't blocked along the way. What Corin didn't know, as he took one last breath and slipped beneath the water, was that the enemy had found the other end of the channel, where it emptied into the stream, and had three soldiers positioned there, ready to strike, if he ever made it that far. Corin hadn't heard any shouts from enemy soldiers for what he judged was several hours now. By the colour of the light, he guessed the sun was setting. He had never made it to the end of the channel at the stream. The way was blocked by the collapsed roof of the channel and by thick roots. After a few seconds of trying to squeeze by the roots, with his air running out and blood pounding in his ears, he had turned around to see flickering orange light behind him. The enemy had set the oil on fire. He could not return. He lay on his back in the water, about to accept his fate, when his eyes caught the faintest glimmer of light above him. Clawing his way upward with his bare hands, he found a narrow tunnel that led to the surface, barely enough room for his face so that he could breathe. Air! He had air. And cover. For a while, enemy soldiers had walked the length of the channel above the ground, stabbing downward with spears and shouting insults. They had not discovered Corin's hiding place. Toward morning, when sunlight filtered down through the hole, Corin realized that a long time ago, a tree had grown over the channel and grown large, its roots seeking the water below. Eventually, the roots had collapsed the roof of the channel. Then later, the tree must have blown over in a storm. The hole Corin was in was where a root had rotted away. Working slowly and quietly, he had managed to gouge out a space big enough for his head, neck, and one arm. The rest of his body was submerged in the water. And he was chilled to the bone, hungry and thirsty. He knew better than to drink stagnant water, and could still smell the stink of the green scum of algae that lay on top of the water. A brief rain shower before dawn, with water streaming down the roots into his parched mouth, was the only water he'd drunk since he left the Royal Army the night before. It was time to get out of the hole, while he still could. Moving with stiff muscles, he carefully reached above and scooped one handful of dirt at a time to rain down on his head and shoulders. When he couldn't see any more, he plunged down into the water, washing away the dirt. The sun had set before Corin was able to squeeze himself up out of the hole to look around. All appeared quiet. He couldn't see any enemy soldiers. A pair of deer grazed in the field, near the tree line. Corin knew it was unlikely deer would expose themselves if people were around, especially people on horses. The enemy must have left the area. His sword was tossed out first. Then he wriggled to break free of the roots and rocks. With legs too stiff and cold to walk, he had to crawl to the stream, where he disciplined himself to scrub his face and hands clean with sand before moving upstream to drink the clear water. Sipping rather than gulping, as he wanted to, he drank his fill slowly. When he was almost able to stand, he stumbled painfully downstream to a pool, where he scrubbed the muck off the rest of himself, and his clothes, as best he could. Sitting by the stream in the silvery moonlight, trying to stretch his leg muscles so he could walk upright, he realized with a start that very day was his 14th birthday. It was not his best birthday. Perhaps it was the worst. His 13th birthday had been interrupted by the people of Krebs Ford, announcing that he, Corin, had been banished from Crichton County. That had been a bad birthday, certainly. But this was his first birthday without his parents, without his mother baking a special treat for him, without his father helping with Corin's morning chores, so they could go fishing most of the day. Fishing, sitting by a stream like this one, talking, or sitting together in comfortable silence. Bring home fresh fish, which Corin and his father cleaned and cooked, served with butter and toasted breadcrumbs, carrots and potatoes. Corin's mouth watered just thinking of such good food. Or, at that moment, any food at all, he was so hungry. Still, he was alive, and being alive meant a chance for a better day ahead. On achingly stiff legs, he walked slowly back to the road, where he looked both ways in the fading light. He was alone. Ready to duck out of the road if he heard anyone coming, he trudged north, hopefully following Thunderbolt and the wizard. After walking north along the road, through the night, and half the next morning, he heard the sound of hooves and ducked behind a tree, his short sword ready. To his surprise and delight, it was Thunderbolt, trotting along, looking lost, and as tired as Corin was. The horse had no saddle, and his coat appeared to have been brushed, so Corin assumed the smart beast had carried the wizard to a village, or farm, somewhere people tended to lost horses and injured wizards. After a joyous greeting, Corin had ridden the horse for only a quarter of an hour, when the horse's wobbly legs told Corin it was time to stop. Finding a field with grass for Thunderbolt to graze and fresh water to drink, the two settled down to catch much-needed sleep, and had awakened later than Corin intended. The sun was low in the western sky. It was almost nighttime. With the two refreshed, watered, and at least Thunderbolt's belly full, they returned to the road and proceeded north at a steady trot, until they found the way blocked by a Royal Army patrol. The patrol was commanded by a sergeant, a man sent hurriedly south to block the road after the Royal Army was alerted by riders sent north from Captain Radic, and the sergeant was following the vague orders he'd been given without any imagination. Block the road, keep lookout for enemy forces, keep any civilians out of harm's way. Corin was a civilian, so Corin had been kept with 7 farm families who had been hastily gathered up from their homes and ordered to stay with the supposed safety of the Royal Army. Keeping civilians safe with enemy troops possibly roaming around the countryside was easier with the civilians in one place rather than wandering around by themselves and getting into trouble. And so, Corin had been forced to stay with the sergeant's 2 dozen troops, most of whom were untrained reserves called up from the local militia in the emergency. 3 days had gone by, with Corin fuming at the delay, before a regular Royal Army unit arrived in the late afternoon, 300 soldiers, galloping down the road, spears in the air and banners flying. As soon as he was able, he sought out the captain of the army unit, a red-haired woman he didn't know, called Glenys McCurt.
"Captain, ma'am, I'm Lord Pedrus Donsalva's servant. We got separated at the Battle of Longshire."
"Huh? Who?"
McCurt was irritated to be interrupted. She had too much to worry about already.
"Who are you?" "Lord Salva, ma'am. The court wizard. I'm his servant, Corin Bladewell. I sent him away on my horse 3 nights ago. He was badly injured. I need to find him."
McCurt frowned. If this boy truly was the master wizard's servant, McCurt needed to pay attention. She didn't need people at the royal court hearing bad things about Captain McCurt.
"Sent him away?"
"Yes, ma'am. He killed 3 enemy wizards, but the enemy still surrounded us, and he was injured, so I sent him away on my horse."
Corin pointed toward Thunderbolt.
"My horse came back this morning, but I don't know where Lord Salva is. I've been stuck here wasting time for 3 days.
McCurt thought for a minute.
"The wizard is gravely ill. He is on his way to the Royal Palace Hospital. We passed his wagon as we rode south yesterday. I didn't hear anything about his servant, though. Can you prove you are his servant?"
"Begging your pardon, Captain," one of McCurt's lieutenants spoke.
If that devil horse is the boy's, then he must be the wizard's servant. I've never met the boy, but I remember that horse from when I stabled General McGrain's horse last year. The stable hands hated that horse, and I hear the wizard's servant is the only one who can ride him.
McCurt considered the horse, then Corrin.
That could be true. Could be. I've also heard the wizard has given his servant magical fighting skills. If you are his servant, surely you could best one of my soldiers with a sword.
Corrin gritted his teeth and fumed with anger. Hadrus was gravely ill, and she wanted him to waste time performing tricks. If Lord Salva is sick, I need to go to him now. I know where he keeps his potions and things, in his tower.
McCurt's eyes narrowed. And yet you refuse to prove who you are?
Corrin had enough of delaying. Behind me is an oak tree, with a target the sergeant's men have been using for archery practice. He knew the tree was a good 20 yards behind him. Without warning, he pulled out his short sword, which caused alarm among McCurt's men, but Corrin threw the sword backwards over his shoulder without looking. There was a gasp from the soldiers as the sword embedded itself in the center of the target. McCurt's eyebrows rose in surprise, but there was a twinkle in her eyes, and she made a short bow from the saddle.
Very well done, Master Servant. I envy you your skills. You may be on your way, with an escort. Lieutenant Mears, we need to send back a courier anyway to report our progress. Select a courier to ride north with Lord Sarva's servant, and Corrin, your name is. Give the wizard my best wishes for a speedy recovery.
McCurt's smile faded.
We need his great power in this war, and sooner than later, I fear.
Any thoughts Corrin had of racing north on a well-rested thunderbolt were dashed when the courier set off at a fast pace, then settled into an easy trot. The courier was named Lena Smith, and at barely 17, he wasn't all that much older than Corrin. Perhaps self-conscious of his youth in the Royal Army, Lena had worked hard to grow a respectable beard.
Mr. Smith, I thought couriers rode fast.
Call me Lena, Corrin. We'll be riding together for a while. It's a long way to the Royal Palace. Can't be wearing out the horses. We'll change horses tomorrow evening, at Hereford.
Corrin shook his head. I won't leave Thunderbolt, and he doesn't need to be spared a fast run. Can't we go faster?
The courier shook his head.
You won't get far on this road without me. The army has checkpoints every few leagues now. I have a pass.
Lena patted his vest, where he carried a scroll written by Captain McCurt.
But you'll be held there without me.
Lena also wore a vest with the Royal Army crest on it, and his horse's saddle was army issue. Corrin wasn't wearing any sort of uniform.
The whole countryside is up in arms after we heard about the battle.
You were there?
Lena asked excitedly.
What happened? I was in Dunladdin when we got the call to move south. Haven't heard much more than we got raided.
Corrin sighed and scratched his head in frustration at the slow pace. If he was going to be stuck with the courier for days, he might as well tell the tale.
It wasn't just a raid, Lena. We were ambushed by 3 wizards and... Are you sure Lord Salva said it was a summer retreat? The land that used to be one of the king's hunting grounds?
Lena asked a couple days later. Having exhausted the Battle of Longshire as a subject for conversation while they rode, Corrin and Lena had been talking about farming that morning. Lena had grown up in Linden City, outside the Royal Palace, where his father was a scribe in the Royal Archives. Other than growing some vegetables and herbs in the yard behind their home, Lena and his family knew nothing about farming. They were riding by a farm Corrin admired, with nicely rolling fields of corn and a well-kept barn, when Corrin excitedly mentioned Pedrus's promise to give him land to farm on his 16th birthday. Lena had tilted his head skeptically and asked the question.
Yes, Corrin answered. Pedrus, I mean Lord Salva, said a couple there farms it for him. I wonder what type...
Wait, Corrin.
What?
Corrin asked.
Lena struggled to find words. If it's the same land, I don't know of any other. The wizard can't give it to you. He doesn't own it.
What?
Are you sure?
Lena nodded seriously.
Uh-huh. I helped my father in the Royal Archives before I joined the army. I remember my father saying, I guess this was the year before last, him saying the old king made a bad deal when he let the wizard use that land, because Lord Salva was making so much money from the farm there. The reason my father wasn't happy is that, because the farm is on land owned by the royal family, Lord Salva doesn't have to pay taxes on his income from that farm. The wizard doesn't pay any taxes at all, so he must not own property anywhere in Tarador.
Corrin fell silent, unable to speak.
Sorry, Lena said after a few minutes. Corrin's sunny morning had been crushed by the news from Lena.
Maybe he meant land in... Where's he from? Stayed. Someplace like that.
Corrin nodded gloomily.
Sure, sure. That must be it, he said,
without believing his own words.
Why would Pedrus have lied to him? Although, Corrin was sure the wizard had lied to him before, at least several times.
Pedrus was a powerful wizard, Corrin only a poor servant boy without a family.
Why bother?
Sometimes my parents would tell me whatever I wanted to hear, just so they could shut me up for a while,
Lena said.
But Corrin wasn't listening. Corrin's wonderful, brief dream of owning a farm was crushed.
It had all been a lie. Only a lie. And an obvious lie. One that Corrin could have discovered by asking almost anyone around the palace. Did Pedrus care so little about Corrin that he couldn't even bother to come up with a decent lie?
Corrin nudged Thunderbolt into an easy gallop.
Come on. If we hurry, we can be at the palace before nightfall.
Be at the palace and confront the wizard about his lies. Being in battle had changed Corrin, changed him in ways he wasn't even aware of. Having faced death, he was no longer willing to be the servant boy that people tried to kick around. He had saved the Crown Princess not once, but three times. He had found the cornerstone, found it after centuries of the best minds in Tarador searching in vain. He had rescued the wizard all by himself. What had he gotten from it? A cramped cubbyhole in a dark, drafty tower. A job working for a wizard who lied to him and denied him credit for his accomplishments.
Lena spurred his horse onward, catching up to Thunderbolt.
Corrin wasn't speaking, but the young soldier could see from the expression on the servant's face that he was angry, very angry.
Lena had left the palace before Corrin arrived, so he didn't know the boy. From Corrin's tale of the Battle of Longsha, the wizard's servant was either a good storyteller or extraordinarily brave. If Corrin had lied about saving the wizard, why would he now be riding to help his master? And if Corrin truly was as brave as he said, and as angry as he looked, well, Lena wouldn't want to get in his way.
Ariana left her personal guard at the entrance to the hospital and went straight for the court wizard's bedside.
Lord Salva, usually with fire or a twinkle in his eyes even at his most weary, now looked sunken into the bed. His skin was grey, ashen, thin, like old paper. A vein in his neck showed his pulse was rapid and erratic. Ariana gestured for the chief physician to attend her.
What ails Lord Salva?
The man snatched off his official white cap in respect for the Crown Princess.
For the most part, exhaustion, Your Highness. Deep, draining, and unnatural exhaustion, though simple exhaustion nonetheless. In an ordinary man who experienced ordinary combat, I would prescribe rest and nutritious, plain, simple foods such as broth and bread and fruit to regain his strength. For a wizard of his unnatural age.
Arianna thought she saw the man make a superstitious sign behind his back.
Who was attacked by forces beyond this world.
He shuddered slightly.
The best course of treatment is beyond my skills.
It may take a wizard to heal this wizard.
Arianna bent close to examine the court wizard.
He smelled faintly of brimstone, though he had been bathed carefully and was dressed in clean robes.
Whatever had happened to the court wizard, it had been bad enough to test even his powers to the limit.
Has he been awake at all?
Lord Salva has been talking in his sleep. It was difficult to understand at first. He mentioned your name, Highness, and his servant. You may have met the boy, Corin, I think his name is. And he spoke of several other wizards. Mostly he kept repeating one word over and over. He said, ascendant. He had been most agitated when saying that word.
Does it mean anything to you?
No, it doesn't. She frowned. Ascendant.
She pronounced the word slowly.
It must be important.
You sent for a wizard?
Yes, Lord Feeny should have received word by now. He's a skilled healer.
Arianna straightened Pedrus's robe and brushed a stray lock of hair from his eyes.
When Shomus gets here, ask him what ascendant means. Unless Lord Salva awakens first, then ask him. And when Lord Salva awakens, send for me, please.
As she left the hospital, Arianna saw that her personal guards were speaking with some of the palace guards. They were all looking grim, shaking their heads.
Princess, her guard captain bowed slightly.
How fares the wizard?
Weak, and he needs to rest. Lord Feeny is on his way. He will surely heal Lord Salva. Our wizard will be back on his feet in no time, she said with a smile.
The smile didn't work. All the men looked grim, staring at the stone floor, shuffling their feet, muttering under their breath.
What is the matter, Captain?
Well, it's like this, Your Highness. I spoke with a soldier this afternoon. He'd come in from the west. General McGrane sent him back with dispatches. He said all the soldiers are worried by how bold the enemy has been. Attacking Lord Salva on our own territory.
He glanced at the floor, embarrassed. It shows the enemy's strength, Your Highness.
And he did not say Tarador's weakness.
Does it? Arianna asked. Strength or fear?
She thought back to something her military tutor, Captain Raddick, had told her. The enemy took a great risk sending three powerful wizards to attack Lord Salva. A terrible risk. Perhaps the enemy took such a risk because they fear our court wizard's growing power. There are few wizards in the world, and few of them can handle power, I'm told. The enemy sent three of their precious wizards into our territory to kill Lord Salva, and they failed. I think that tells us of the enemy's desperation, not strength.
But I am, after all, only a girl, and I do not know of military matters as you men do.
She had shamed the men, shamed them, and opened their eyes.
A guard captain nodded. Her Highness speaks the truth. The enemy fears us. My apologies, Your Highness. I should not have let fear enter my heart.
Arianna thought of another thing Raddick had said.
There is nothing wrong with fear, Captain, unless it leads to despair.
I think it best that we leave fear and despair to our enemy, she said with a smile.
The captain bowed.
Yes, Your Highness.
This young girl was going to be a formidable queen some day, if she lived that long.
And if her mother didn't stand by while the enemy conquered the realm, while Ariana awaited her crown.
Lena and Corin did hurry, to the point where Lena's horse was wobbly on its legs, and even Thunderbolt was laboring to gallop. But it was still after nightfall when they arrived at the castle gate. The roads toward Linden had been choked with wagons, with people from the border counties looking for safety in case of further invasion by Isidore, and by wagons loaded with grain, in case Isidore raided or burned the storehouses near the border. News of the battle in Longshire had everyone spooked, particularly news that the raiders included three wizards who had been bold enough to challenge Lord Salva. The court wizards' near mythical powers in the minds of the citizens of Tarador were such that for an enemy to feel confident enough to attack their wizard, the situation for Tarador must be dire indeed. When they finally reached the castle gate, with much shouting, cursing, and pushing by Lena, the young soldier pulled out the pass signed by Captain McCurt and the oilskin pouch of dispatches.
Trooper Lena Smith, with dispatches from Captain McCurt to General McGrain.
The lead guard, tired from long hours of mostly turning people away from the gate, held Lena's pass up to the torchlight.
Looks real, but if you've been in the field, you won't know today's password.
Lena! I recognize you, said another guard. Your father is a scribe here.
He's all right, let him through.
Wait, the lead guard snapped. Who's this with you?
The wizard's servant, Corin Bladewell, come here from the battle at Longshire, Lena answered.
Corin Bladewell?
The lead guard held the lantern up to shine light on Corin's face.
Why, it is you.
This caused surprised muttering amongst the guards.
Didn't expect to see you here.
What the guard said next shocked both Corin and Lena.
Seize the prisoner,
the man said, almost reluctantly.
What?
Corin gulped, and Thunderbolt danced backwards, away from the approaching guards. Corin's hand reflexively went to the hilt of his sword, which caused the guards to draw their swords.
Whoa, whoa, what are you talking about?
Lena moved his horse between Corin and the guards, keeping his own sword in its sheath.
Captain Raddick sent back word from Longshire about the battle, and his dispatches said Corin here is a coward and a deserter, that he left the wizard at the start of the battle, and later left his post to run off.
Sorry about this, Corin, lad.
What? I am not a coward. I didn't desert. I went to rescue.
Corin stopped, seething with anger. No words from him were going to convince the guards who had orders. He looked behind him, then at the guards, at the open gate behind them. Corin knew, and so did the guards who had watched him riding and sparring with the weapons master, that if Corin rode away, they couldn't catch him. And if he fought, it would be a bloody battle.
Where is the wizard? Lena asked sharply. What has he said?
In hospital, delirious with fever. He hasn't spoken about Corin or the battle. Or much of anything, the lead guard admitted.
Corin, lad, I have to take you in. Don't make this difficult on everyone.
I'll take him in,
Lena offered to break the stalemate.
But first Corin is going to attend to the wizard. Corin knows where Lord Salva keeps his potions and things. He may be able to help the healers.
The lead guard considered for a moment.
All right, then. It's on you to watch him, Lena. But Corin, you can't keep your sword. Can't bring it into the hospital, anyway. We'll see to your horses.
Corin silently handed his precious dwarf-made short sword to Lena.
Prisoner.
He was to be locked in the dungeon, unless Pedrus could tell the truth to the guards. Corin felt a chill go down his spine. If the wizard would tell the truth. He'd lied about so many things. Why should Corrin expect the wizard to tell the truth now? There was nothing else he could do, so he let Lena lead the way through the gate. Instead of ducking his head in shame, Corrin met the guard's eyes with anger and defiance, anger and determination. Her Highness Ariana Trehaime, Crown Princess of Tarador, soon to be Queen of the Realm, Matress of the Church, Protector of the Weak, Commander-in-Chief of the Royal Army and Navy, and etc., also was quite angry that very moment. Furious, in fact. Since word reached the palace of the wholly unexpected battle in Longsha, followed by the arrival of the seriously ill court wizard, she'd been consumed with preparing her country against invasion. Or, rather, watching her mother frantically make one decision after another, sometimes changing her mind twice in the space of an hour. Kalana was doing the best she could, but she was in a panic over the raid, and near death of her court wizard, and she wasn't thinking clearly. She was driving her army commanders crazy, to the point where General McGrane, in a weak moment, confessed to Ariana that, as soon as Captain Radic returned to the palace, McGrane was going into the field to assume command of the defense forces on the eastern border. At the very least, in the field, he would not get contradictory orders from the regent every hour. What had made Ariana absolutely furious is that she just learned, a few minutes before, that Captain Radic's hurriedly written account of the battle had declared Corrin Bladewell to be a coward and a deserter, and that the servant boy was to be arrested on sight. That her mother had not known of the army's orders didn't matter. What mattered was that Ariana insisted her mother come with her as soon as they were done reviewing the evening changing of the guard, to see General McGrane, and rescind the awful, untrue charges against Corrin. And that McGrane immediately send out a patrol of soldiers to find Corrin. When the wizard had come back, delirious with fever and without Corrin, Ariana had assumed Corrin was still with Captain Radic, safe with Radic's men. Now, apparently, no one knew where he was. Ariana burst out of the doorway into the courtyard, her mother and guards trailing behind. Kalana was forced to hike up her skirts to keep up an uncomfortable and undignified action that had her red in the face. "Young lady, you slowed down!" Ariana spun on her heels, oblivious to the royal guards who were lined up, waiting for the regent and crown princess to watch their ceremonial evening changing of the guard, as they did most evenings. "No, mother," she said in a harsh whisper, loud enough to scandalize the servants. "Corrin has been missing for days, and the army has orders to arrest him as a coward. And no one thought it was important to tell me." She stomped over to the raised dais, where she usually stood to review the guards, and was about to signal for the ceremony to begin without her mother, when she saw a familiar person emerge from a doorway on the opposite side of the courtyard. "Corrin!" she shouted in delight. Corrin had been biting his lip, looking at the ground, lost in thought about what he would say to Pedras, if the wizard were capable of listening. As he and Lena came into the torchlit courtyard, he heard a familiar girl's voice cry out, "Corrin!" He was so startled that he stumbled and bumped into Lena. And right then, it happened. As Ariana shouted in delight, she dashed forward, and a heavy stone gargoyle crashed to the dais right where she had been only an eye blink before. A large piece of stone that had been the gargoyle's right arm broke off and struck the crown princess hard on her back, smashing her to the hard flagstones of the courtyard. She lay stunned, the breath knocked out of her, stars swimming in her eyes, her ears ringing. Corrin's feet got tangled up with Lena's, and the two fell hard to the stone surface of the courtyard, with Corrin bumping his head on the flagstones. He was on his knees, shaking his head, when he saw, heard, and felt the stone strike Ariana. Kalana had been behind her daughter, far enough that she was only pelted with a few pebbles broken off the gargoyle, close enough that she was at her daughter's side, cradling her bloodied head, before Corrin had run more than a few steps toward Ariana. Guards had moved to surround the stricken princess, to protect her against further danger, with swords drawn, eyes peering up the roof where the gargoyle had come from. The regent was not looking upward. Her weapon was the daggers in her eyes, eyes fixed on the unexpected and unwelcome sight of Corrin Bladewell. The boy had been gone for weeks, and the instant Carlana saw him again, her daughter was struck down. Corrin had been in Lavan when that province was invaded. Corrin was at the river when a bear attacked her daughter. Corrin was at Longshire with Pedras when the wizard was attacked by the enemy. Carlana had sent Pedras there because that area of Tarador was one of the least likely places the wizard could find trouble. But, oh no. Every time Corrin is there, terrible trouble follows. She knew it was a bad idea to let the boy into the castle. She knew it. "Get away from my daughter, you jinx!" the regent screamed, pointing at Corrin. And he stopped in his tracks. "Look what you did to my daughter, you cursed jinx! Get out!" Ariana groaned, and Carlana cradled her daughter's head. "Get out of here, and don't ever come back! Get out!" Corrin froze, hands up to show he had no weapons, listening to the regent's voice echoing off the stone walls of the courtyard, burning into his ears. One of the guards, assuming the regent meant that Corrin had somehow caused the gargoyle to fall, took a hesitant step forward, and Corrin ran. Ran blindly, pushing the stunned Lena out of his way, down a corridor, up another, around a corner, running, 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 until he was out of breath and out of places to run. He stopped, huffing and puffing, bent over, hands on his knees, trying to catch his breath, and trying to collect his wits. Jinx. He was a jinx. He knew it. Bad luck to everyone around him. With Pedras ill, the wizard had been unable to counter the power of Corrin's curse. Now his curse had hurt Ariana, hurt her badly. His curse struck everyone he cared about. The wizard abruptly sat upright in his hospital bed, startling the healer who had been sitting by his side, cooling his feverish forehead with damp cloths. Something had awakened him from his fitful sleep.
"Magic. Dark, foul magic. Here in the castle." "What is happening?"
Pedras demanded.
I don't...
the healer stammered.
"Find someone who does, then!"
His head swimming, Pedras' initial burst of energy was fading quickly. Knowing he would soon be slipping back into feverish delirium, he reached into the spirit realm and pulled power into himself. It was a temporary surge of power. A dangerous surge he would pay terribly for later, especially in his weakened condition. If he did not feel the need so dire, he would not have done it. Impatient, the wizard swept aside the bedsheet, looking in dismay at the thin, sweat-soaked robe he was wearing.
"A robe? Get me a decent robe! Oh, forget it!"
Sweeping past the paralyzed healer, Pedras grabbed a cloak off a hook and threw it around him, storming out past the guards. He strode quickly down the hallway and out of the hospital building, where he saw the chief guard rushing across the courtyard.
"Tamas! Tamas!"
he shouted in a powerful voice to get the man's attention.
"Come here! What has happened?"
The man named Tamas hurried over to the wizard, out of breath.
"Begging your pardon, my lord. A gargoyle fell off the roof and struck the princess. She may have broken ribs. The regent blamed your servant." "My servant?"
Pedras grabbed the man's shoulders and shook him.
"Corrin is here. When did he get here?" "I think he just got here recently, my lord."
The chief guard actually didn't know The comings and goings of servants was not something his guards were instructed to inform him about.
He was in the courtyard when the gargoyle fell. The regent believes he had something to do with it. She said he is a jinx. I suspect this was an accident.
Fool! That idiot woman! Pedras raged, not caring who heard him railing against the regent. Corin had nothing to do with it, and this was no accident. This was the act of an assassin. I can sense the foulness of dark magic. This is the work of the enemy. There is an assassin in the castle, perhaps more than one.
The chief guard, who was responsible for the safety of the royal family within the confines of the castle walls, tried to swallow with a throat that suddenly was dry as a desert. He had already been dealing with increased security because of the battle at Longshire, dealing with the constant demands of the regent, and on this perfectly ordinary evening, with an old piece of masonry falling off the roof. An unfortunate accident, that was. He would, he had thought, have a long night making sure the princess had the best of medical care, calming down her mother and sending a crew onto the roof to inspect the hundreds of other gargoyles and other decorative stone objects attached to the top of the walls. But an assassin? An assassin that he had let inside the walls of the castle, the capital of Tarador, the very seat of power? Such a failure could not be borne. He would have to resign in disgrace. If he survived the night. He knew better than to question the court wizard's pronouncement. If Lord Salva said he felt dark magic, then foul deeds were afoot tonight. And Tomas would trust the judgment of a feverish wizard over the flighty and emotional regent any day. Especially this day.
What are your orders, my lord?
Seal off the castle. No one in or out.
Pedras paused. For that order was so obvious, it didn't warrant speaking aloud.
Think, he told himself.
What was most important?
Corin, my servant,
he said, as his right hand squeezed the chief guard's shoulder in a magic-powered crushing grip. And the man grunted in pain.
You must get my servant to safety. Bring him to the fortress and post guards there. Do it now. You must protect him.
Oh, and bring the princess there also.
Pedras said it as an afterthought.
I will be there as soon as I can tend to her injuries.
Tomas thought he should ask the wizard to tend to his shoulder, which he rotated to make sure it still worked after the wizard released his iron grip. Why did the wizard care so much about a lowly servant who no assassin would think twice about? It wasn't his place to question the mighty. Not on a night when dark magic stalked the castle walls.
Yes, my lord. Do you need assistance to deal with the assassin?
Pedras blinked slowly to clear his vision. He was already feeling the effects of the artificial energy coursing through his mortal body.
Yes. Send me two of your guards. I need to go up on the roof.
The chief guard turned to bark orders at his men. And that was where the night truly began to spiral out of control. And the future path of Corin's life was decided. Because when an unwritten order is repeated enough times, from one person to the next, the original intent is often lost in a confusion of misunderstandings, rumors, and embellishments. That explains how protect Corin and bring him to the fortress changed into what guards throughout the castle heard. Chapter 13. When Corin recovered his wits, he angrily wiped away his tears and considered what he should do. Nothing, he thought, had changed from his original purpose of coming to the castle. He needed to attend to the wizard, although now it seemed best that he first go to the tower and collect a sample of healing potions to bring to the hospital with him. The courtyard was in an uproar, with guards running this way and that, although no one seemed to know what they were doing, and no one yet called out for him to stop. He ran up into the tower and pressed the locked door to the potion room in exactly the place Pedras had instructed him to avoid the wards from releasing banshees and blasting his ears. He had collected a sample of healing potions in a leather satchel when he heard several sets of boots tramping across the courtyard to stop at the doorway below. Corrin froze in place to listen, holding his breath.
"What are we here for?" one guard's voice asked. "The wizard's brat. We're to take him to the dungeon, is my orders."
"The dungeon?" the first guard exclaimed, surprised. "I didn't even know he'd returned. He's a coward and a deserter, but... And he made that gargoyle fall on the princess. I heard the regent say it myself." "The wizard told the captain of the guards, find Corrin Bladewell and bring the boy to the dungeon."
"The wizard is up from his sickbed?"
"Aye. An attack on the princess is enough to make the dead rise."
Corrin's ears didn't register the next words of the guards, for all he could hear was that the wizard ordered the guards to bring Corrin to the dungeon. The dungeon. The word sent chills down Corrin's spine, for the dungeon held only the worst of Lyndon's criminals. Slowly, he set the leather satchel on the floor. He would not need potions this night. This was the moment Cara Falco had predicted. Corrin needed to run far away and never come back. Sought by the army as a coward and a deserter, declared by the regent to be a dangerous jinx who had injured the crown princess. He was not a coward, not a deserter. But he was a jinx. He knew it. He would always be a jinx, always bring nothing but trouble to people around him. And the worst trouble was for the people he cared about most, for the people... A horrible thought struck Corrin like a lightning bolt. He had not rescued Ariana from the bear after all. She had been attacked by the bear because Corrin was there. Corrin the jinx, who brought misfortune and disaster everywhere he went to everyone around him. Ariana's life had been in danger because of him. He was no hero. Far from it. He was a curse. If there had not been a bear in the forest, Ariana would have fallen from the boat and drowned, or sat down in the forest and been bitten by a serpent, or maybe been struck by lightning. As long as Corrin was nearby, something bad was bound to happen to the princess. And he had not rescued Pedras from the enemy. The enemy had attacked the wizard in a peaceful village because Corrin was there. Corrin had brought the attack down on the wizard and Radic's men. That was why Pedras had ordered him thrown into the dungeon, and why the wizard would use the charges of cowardice and desertion as an excuse to get rid of Corrin Bladewell. Because Corrin's curse was so strong, so dangerous, that Pedras realized by now that even a powerful wizard could not stop it. For the security of the nation, Corrin Bladewell belonged in a dungeon. Or in a grave. Corrin sat on the floor of the potion room, back against the stone wall of the tower, hearing the guards' feet pounding on the stairs, up, then down. No one had tried the door to the potion rooms. They must have recognized the ward symbols. From the window, he heard the second guard's voice say,
"He's not here. Leave 2 men at the door, and follow me. We'll search the west wing of the palace next."
A few minutes later, Corrin risked a glance out the window. There were only 2 guards waiting by the door. No matter. Corrin knew a secret way out of the tower. The trouble would not be getting out of the tower. The trouble would be getting out of the castle walls. And he might know how to do that, too. Moving slowly and carefully, he stepped out of the potion room and down the stairs to his bedchamber. The guards had searched his small room. Things were strewn all over the floor, and his bed was laying on its side.
Quickly, Corin went directly to a particular stone in the wall behind the bed, and wriggled it out of the wall. Behind the stone was a hole with a cloth-wrapped package, which Corin pulled out. Inside, there were two knives, fishing line and hooks, string, flint and steel for starting fires, the money he had saved from his pay, and, most importantly, the money Kaer Falco gave him. Corin had changed those gold coins for smaller coins, for servants running away should not attract attention by trying to use gold coins. He paused to look around the small room that had been his home. He realized that he would miss it, even though it could be cold, damp, and drafty. Heading out the door, he stepped over items the guards had scattered on the floor, and saw one of the items was a quill pen and inkpot that Pedrus had given to him. Back when the wizard was pretending to care about his servant. A note. He couldn't leave without writing a note. At least to apologize to Ariana for nearly killing her. He would never get another chance. It was important that Ariana know he hadn't meant for his curse to hurt her, and that he was leaving so his curse couldn't hurt anyone else. It was surprisingly hard to put his thoughts on paper, and not just because the quill pen kept running out of ink. He had too much to say, too much anger and regret, and not enough time to write it all down. When he finished scribbling the note, he read it, and almost tore it up. It was a mess, full of smudges and misspellings, as a result of his haste. "Oh, to hell with it," he said aloud, almost too loud, for the guards were only two floors below him, and left the note on top of the bed. What the guards outside didn't know was that the firewood for the tower originally used to be stacked in a room under the ground floor to keep it dry, and so occupants of the tower did not have to go outside in nasty weather when more wood was needed. There was a room in the foundation of the tower, accessed by a trapdoor under a closet on the ground floor, and a hatch leading outside, up against the wall of the castle, hidden behind overgrown bushes. When Pedrus moved in years ago, he had the firewood moved outside because he didn't want bugs like termites inside the tower. But the trapdoor and the hatch still worked. Corin had oiled their hinges only 2 months ago. The moment of greatest danger was moving the cleaning supplies that were stored on top of the trapdoor, with the guards just outside the heavy wood door of the tower. Corin's heart nearly stopped when a mop toppled over. He managed to catch it with a foot just before the handle hit the floor. The trapdoor opened quietly. Corin slipped through and carefully let it close behind him. Now he was in darkness, complete darkness. Fortunately, since he could not light a torch, he knew every step on the ladder, and the chamber was empty. When he reached the floor, he felt his way along the wall until he came to the hatch, which he unlocked by sliding aside the bar. Cracking open the hatch only an inch, he listened for voices, but no one sounded nearby. Careful to open the hatch only enough to squeeze through, he stepped into the night and closed the hatch, crouching behind the bushes that screened the hatch from the castle courtyard. The courtyard still rang with shouts and commotion. It must be that the guards, soldiers, and palace staff were frantically searching for him. He felt safe, for now. The bushes were thick and extended almost all the way to the castle wall. The wall was in darkness behind the wizard's tower, and there Corin knew another secret, a possible way under and through the wall. A storm drain,
which let rainwater cascading off the wizard's tower drain away, without flooding the courtyard. This particular drain had an iron cover that had rusted over the years. The castle maintenance crew knew about the rusty